Daniel chapter 3, verse 12 through 20 and 24 through 25. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in a furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king Nebuchadnezzar, answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression on his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated seven times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of his mighty men of the army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see four men bound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the appearance of the fourth is like the Son of the Gods. This is the word of the Lord." Please be seated.
Folks, we have had a wonderful morning, and we have had a wonderful week here at the chapel. It's been a blessing for me as not just a pastor on staff, but also as a father, to see the impact that has been made in the lives of so many people through the week that we have had, through God's goodness and his provision. We had over 550 children and volunteers who were involved in this wonderful VBS, and you can see a picture of all those involved there. And as I think about what that means, it means that the younger generation is being equipped with the truth of who God is, of who Jesus is, and who he has made them to be in his image. This is the future of the church, the future generation that will take the message of Jesus Christ to not only our community, but beyond. And to know that our body of Christ here at the chapel, we're able to flex their muscles as a body should do in order to serve and to lead and to disciple these young people. I am extremely grateful. I had a daughter who was involved in serving and two sons who were involved in attending. And it was really a wild week. It was exciting. The greatest adventure of learning of God's wild and wonderful ways. There's a theme verse that we had for this VBS Sunday, for this whole VBS week, coming from Job 37:5. "God's voice thunders in marvelous ways. He does great things beyond our understanding." And I believe that that is true. I want to just give just one more word of appreciation to our children's ministry team and to all those who volunteered to say thank you for the role that you have played in building God's kingdom this past week. So thank you. As has been mentioned from the start of our worship service, there were big truths that we looked at each morning and each day of VBS. And this is where I'll need a little help from the kids and grown-ups. Like, unleash your inner child and let's learn to express a little bit. By the way, it was great to see some grown-ups getting into some of those movements. Not only does it help you with your exercise calculations on your watch, but it also helps you to be able to engage a little bit in worship in ways that might be a little unfamiliar, but so important. So on Monday, we heard the story of a wild battle, Gideon and his fight and the victory that God gave him. The big truth, God is undefeatable. You can do better than that. All right, on Tuesday, a wild stand in the fiery furnace, which is our story today. The big truth, God is unmatchable. I'm still looking for more. Wednesday, we had a wild rescue with Paul and Silas in prison and being freed. The big truth, God is uncontainable. We're getting there. Thursday, a wild love, the birth of Jesus Christ, that Christmas story that changed everything. The great truth, God is unforgettable. Now we're talking. That's, yes, good job. Finally, Friday, Elijah has an encounter with God in a whisper. And the truth there, God is unfathomable. And I'm really glad that we say that quietly because I can hardly pronounce that word. But yet, these are the truths that our children have learned this past week. And it was just wonderful to be able to observe that just being around this building. Well, this morning, we turn our attention to one of those stories, the story of the fiery furnace and the wild stand that was taken by three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, from Daniel chapter 3. And kids, if you have your bulletins that you were hopefully handed as you came in, feel free to doodle and draw, and if something is said, write it down. We'd love for any and all interaction during this time as we learn about this unmatchable God. That's the truth to take from this morning. God is indeed unmatchable. And I found it funny, this was probably intentional on the parts of those planning, that God would be unmatchable, that would be the big truth when we're talking about the fiery furnace. And if you don't know where I'm going, just look at the word match. It's in the word unmatchable. Does that make a little sense? Oh, okay, match, starts a fire, okay. And as we look at the text today, we're gonna be able to learn some great lessons that this has for us today. Now, I am convinced that this story of the fiery furnace from Daniel chapter 3 is one of the most famous stories in all of the Bible. If you grew up going to church, you were probably taught this in your Sunday school class, right? We're all familiar with that. These three guys go into the furnace and they're saved. I'm also convinced that this is one of the most famous stories of the Bible because it was made into a VeggieTales movie in 1995. And if you have Larry the Cucumber portraying one of the characters, you know you've arrived. Now in this story, which is entitled Rack, Shack, and Benny, which is a play on the names of the characters, they are not commanded to bow down to a golden idol, but they are commanded to bow down to a chocolate bunny. And like in this story with our heroes, they refuse to do it. They refuse to compromise their beliefs and bow down to a false god. But we had a lot of fun this week. You can see a picture on the screen of our own fiery furnace that we created in our upstairs hallway. And you can imagine the children moving through the flames unharmed, just like our heroes did. We had three people representing our heroes. We had Tommy Trailmix, Nick Fearless, and Abretnego, as we're going to call him. And there they are. They are in the fiery furnace, and they are good because they are saved. This is a story of great courage that has great application for us today. I'm convinced. And as I was studying it this past week, I realized I have so much to learn from this wonderful example of these men and their faithfulness and the faithfulness of the God that they serve, who is my God too. So let's take a look at some of the context. As we look at the Bible, we should always try to understand what's going on at this time in history when this great story is happening. So the date is about 600 BC, give or take. This is early in the reign of a man named Nebuchadnezzar II. Maybe you've heard of him. He was the first full ruler and king of the Babylonian Empire. And you can see a sculpture of him from ancient times. I don't know what's going on his face. It's supposed to be a beard, but this is the way they knew to make sculpture. He was one of, if not the most powerful man at the time on the planet, because he ruled one of the largest and most powerful empires of his day. Babylon itself was located about 60 miles from modern-day Baghdad, Iraq. And if you look at this map, you can see the green section is the Babylonian Empire. This map is significant as well because it shows that the Babylonian Empire included part of the nation of Judah. And what would happen is that when the Babylonians would conquer a nation, and they conquered several nations and communities along their way to expansion, is they would extract some of the best and brightest from that country, and they would bring them to Babylon. And that's what happened, is that over a period of several decades, the Babylonians took people from Judah and Jerusalem and began bringing them over to their own country to enculturate them and to indoctrinate them in the ways of their culture and their religion, in hopes that these people would become great leaders in their society. Interestingly, as we think about Nebuchadnezzar, he was a great patron of the arts and architecture. And to this day, you can see wonderful works that he commissioned that are now have been reconstructed. For example, in a museum in Germany, you can see a reconstruction of the Ishtar Gate, which was one of the main gates heading out of the ancient Babylonian city. And maybe you, some of you have been there to see it. But Nebuchadnezzar was a powerful man. And he was also at times a cruel man. And we see this in the case, especially of what eventually happened to the nation of Judah, where the Babylonians came in one final time in 586 BC and obliterated the temple and completely attempted to wipe out the worship of the one true God by destroying the building of the temple. And yet God is unmatchable, and he would not be defeated. And in fact, we will see from our story today how he would show himself to be ultimately victorious and more powerful than Nebuchadnezzar himself. We find from the story our heroes Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had already been faithful within Babylonian culture. And that's where our story really picks up today. So we're going to take a brief look at an outline of the story. It helps me, maybe it helps you to see how can this story be broken up. If you write or read or study any kind of movie and a script or television show or any kind of theatrical performance, just like this past week, my daughter and I had a date night and we went to the Williamsburg Library and we were able to witness Shrek the Musical Jr., which was really entertaining. I know some of the young people in the cast go here to the chapel. It was wonderful to be able to follow along. In Act 1, this is what's happening, and this is the song. In Act 2, they go here to the swamp, and in Act 3... If you don't know Shrek, you should get to know it. But any great drama, any great story has a wonderful plot that moves along, and at some point you get to the climax of that plot. And we'll see that here in our story today. So this is the outline of Daniel chapter 3, and it's centered around the theme of fire. The first part is the lighting of the fire. And then the second part is the stoking of the flames. We might even be able to say the pouring on of the gasoline. The third part is the towering inferno. And then finally, the fourth part is extinguishing the blaze. So let's walk through and look at how this story plays out in Daniel chapter 3. Make some observations about it. First, the lighting of the fire, really verses 1 through 7. What we find in this story, if you go back and you read, and I would encourage you to go back and read it this week, we find that Nebuchadnezzar, early in his reign, is seeking to establish in the hearts and minds of everybody in his empire that he is the man. He is in control. He is the king. And one of the ways he sought to do this is to say, I want everybody to bow down to this great golden image that I have had constructed. Now, we don't know exactly what the golden image looked like. You see a depiction here that may have looked like Nebuchadnezzar himself, a big statue of him. The way that it's described is interesting. It's 60 cubits tall, which is almost 100 feet high, which is the same height of a 10-story building, but it's also very narrow, maybe about 9 feet wide or so. So it may have looked more like a giant obelisk rather than a statue of a person. But either way, he hosts this national gathering of all of his leaders from military and administration and government, and he's going to force them to do something. And he says, what I want to happen is I want you, when you hear this wonderful orchestra that I had got together, and it's interesting to read in the text that all of these instruments are listed, 6 different instruments plus every other kind of instrument. This is some kind of a large orchestra that he's gathered at the site of this golden image. And when you hear the sounds of the orchestra, you are supposed to bend down and literally lie down in front and worship this image, to prostrate yourself before this image. By the way, I did that in the first service and I pulled a muscle, so I'm trying to watch myself. But regardless of whether you had a pulled muscle or not, you're supposed to bow down to this image, because allegiance to this image and this god that it may have represented was allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar the king. Not only were the sounds of the orchestra heard, but the smell of fire was heard, because the threat was, if you don't bow down, you are going into the fire of this burning fiery furnace, a term that is repeated throughout this chapter. We don't know if this was an oven making for making bricks, or maybe it was an oven for making food. One way or the other, it was large enough that several people could be inside. That was the threat. And failure to comply meant certain death. That's the lighting of the fire. Next, we move to the stoking of the flames, or, like I said, pouring gasoline on the flames. What we see is that these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, had been given positions of authority and importance within the Babylonian government because of their friend Daniel and his faithfulness and his request. And you can imagine that some of the other Babylonian officials were a little jealous of these positions that these men took. And so we read in Daniel 3, verse 8, "Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans," which is another word for Babylonians, "came forward and maliciously accused the Jews." The language here could also literally be translated, "They ate bits and pieces of the Jews." They literally wanted to devour them. They were so jealous. Because what they observed is that these three men, among all others, refused to do something. They refused to bow down. And this is interesting because it would have been pretty obvious, given their position, that they were not doing this. Now let's take a moment and look at these men and at their names specifically. I was told a number of years ago that this story of the fiery furnace is one of parents' favorites to read to their children before bedtime. And I thought, well, that's a little weird. What kind of images do you want in your children's heads before they close their eyes at night? And they said, it's because of the names of the people. And it's because after you finish reading the story, you close it and you say, okay, now it's Shadrach, Meshach, and to bed we go. Try using that tonight. But their names are significant. What you might not know is that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are names given to them that are Babylonian names. Let's think about this for a minute. What do these names mean? Shadrach means royal or the great scribe. Maybe that was his role within the government. Meshach means guest of the king. And finally, Abednego, servant of Nabu. Nabu, or Nebo, was possibly the patron god of Nebuchadnezzar himself. Even Nebuchadnezzar's name means Nabu, protect your servant. So these names were meant to give these men a new identity. But if you read back a few chapters before, in Daniel chapter 1, we find out that they came over to Babylon with Hebrew names. Hebrew names that communicated their true identity. In Daniel 1, verse 7, we read, "And the chief of the eunuchs," that is a servant of Nebuchadnezzar, "gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar. Hananiah he called Shadrach. Mishael he called Meshach. And Azariah he called Abednego." So that made me wonder, we know what their Babylonian names meant and what that was intended to be. You have a new identity, it's committed to Babylon. What did their original Hebrew names mean? And why was that significant? Well, Hananiah means God has favored. Mishael, who is what God is. And then finally, Azariah, the Lord has helped. You see, folks, these men were given new names in hopes of establishing a new identity, but they knew their true identity was rooted in the true God, and they never forgot that. And the key idea here is that they did not worship and serve this golden image, this false god. And again, this would have been very obvious that they were not doing so because they had such positions of importance. These men had a lot to lose. They had it made in the shade. They had significant positions of authority. They were probably paid very well within one of the largest governments and empires in the ancient world. But they refused to let that define them because they remembered whose they were, the God, the one true God. So it's no surprise that when these other Babylonian leaders say, hey, these three guys are not bowing down to your statue, that Nebuchadnezzar responds and he's a little upset. In fact, it describes him as if he is a child throwing a tantrum. So parents, not that your children have ever done this, but should they do it and they throw a tantrum, you can say, you are behaving like an evil king, and see if that works. Listen, kids. So he calls them over. He wants to give them a chance. And he questions these men. And he says, is this true that you do not bow down to this giant statue, which therefore means you do not show allegiance to me? And he gives them an opportunity. And he says, I will give you the chance that when you hear the instruments, you bow down. And if you fail the test, you will go into the furnace. And then the line that always makes me stop and say, wow, look at the pride. Look at how Nebuchadnezzar thought he was unmatchable, is at the end of verse 15, where he says, and who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? He thought he was unmatchable. He thought he had ultimate power. And he asks them this question. They answer the question with wonderful courage and wonderful truth. In fact, I'm going to read verses 16 through 18 to show you just how much they courageously took a wild stand in front of this powerful man. Verse 16 of Daniel 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered the king and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this manner. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. There's a direct answer to their question. Nebuchadnezzar said, what God will deliver you from out of my hand? And they answer, our God will deliver us. And then they continue in verse 18. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. They were actually uncertain if God would save them, but they were certain that he could save them. And what they were also certain of is that they must remain faithful and they would not bow down. And so what these men were doing is they were remaining faithful simply to one of the first and most basic commands that God had given his people in ancient times through his servant Moses. They were remaining faithful to the one true God by remaining obedient to the first of the two commandments that God gave through Moses in the Ten Commandments. All the way back towards the beginning of the Bible in Exodus chapter 20. We read these words, and as you listen to these words, think about this position of looking at this giant golden statue and being told, you must serve and bow down to this statue. God says through Moses, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in earth, the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. Which is precisely what these men were being commanded to do. But they refused to do it. Their message was essentially, God is able to save us, and we serve him. But even if he does not save us, we will not serve your gods or put you before him. This was an amazing wild stand of courage, looking at the possibility of death, but still remaining faithful. A commentator and scholar, Daniel L. Smith Christopher, writes these words, "The most infuriating aspect of radical faith is its adamant refusal to be impressed with the obvious, namely the subordinated status and powerlessness of the Jews before the mighty emperor, and their steadfast adherence to an alternative reality. God reigns." This is the classic underdog story, historically speaking. It's like Rocky and Rudy and Rudolph all together in one. And these men remained faithful because they believed in God. Well, that moves to the next part of our drama, the towering inferno. Nebuchadnezzar again responds like a child throwing a tantrum, and he orders that the fire be heated 7 times hotter than it normally is. which is crazy. And Nebuchadnezzar orders that these three men be pushed. But before they're pushed, a very important detail in the text tells us that they were bound. That means in some way, shape, or form, their hands were bound so that they could not refuse. And they were pushed into this fire. And the fire was so hot that even the soldiers pushing them in were consumed and burned and killed. And then something remarkable happens. Is after a few moments, Nebuchadnezzar and some of his officials find it strange that they don't hear screams and terror and pain. In fact, Nebuchadnezzar sort of stands up and you can imagine he sees somehow through the flames and he says, wait a minute, did we not put three men into the furnace? And the answer in the text is true, O king. He says, then why do I see them walking around with their hands no longer bound? And a fourth person apparently in there that looks like one of the son of the gods. This was the only language he could conceive of as someone who believed in multiple gods. And what we understand is that indeed God had provided maybe an angel, maybe God's very presence himself, because throughout the Old Testament, when you read about God sending an angel to be supernaturally present with his people, often this is called the angel of the Lord, who is a representative of God and in some cases the very embodiment of God himself. And so God was present through this angelic being. And all of a sudden the tune changes completely. It's a remarkable occurrence. And we get to the final part of our narrative in the extinguishing of the blaze. Nebuchadnezzar, who had previously ordered these men to be pushed into the fire, now orders them to come out. And they come out, and they don't even smell like smoke. This is amazing. And what's more amazing is that everybody in this high-level Babylonian empire saw this event happen with their own eyes. And for me, this is one of the moments where God was totally unmatchable. And through the faithfulness of his people, just like the faithfulness of the Israelites throughout the Old Testament, when they lived faithfully, and when we live faithfully, other people will recognize the true God. And so Nebuchadnezzar has them come out. I read a quotation from an early church father in the fourth century named John Chrysostom, which I thought was significant. He writes, "Those that are gathered become an audience to God's power. They had become summoned for one thing, but they all departed having beheld another thing. They came in order to worship the image, and they departed, having derided the image and struck with wonder at the power of God through the signs that had taken place with respect to these young men. They were not harmed. Their bonds were gone, just like Nebuchadnezzar's power over them. And Nebuchadnezzar even had to pause and recognize the miraculousness of this moment. He recognized them for their wild stand and their courageous faith. He also recognized God's majestic power to deliver and save his people. He refers to God as the Most High God and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego as servants of the Most High God. As a result of this, the story, you can see, he changes his mind completely. He wanted to kill these men. Now he promotes them by the end of the story to positions of even more influence. And we find that God had been faithful to his people, as they had demonstrated faithfulness to him. The most powerful man in the world recognized the unmatchable and infinitely more powerful God of the universe. Even a pagan king proclaims that he is the Most High God and recognizes his greatness. I'm reminded of one of the memory verses that the children learned at VBS this past week for this particular passage from Psalm 47:2. And I'm going to try to get you guys involved in this. And you've been sitting for a little while. You can still stay seated, but I want you to get into the motions a little bit, okay? So put your hands up like this, all right? That's right. It's okay. Your kids are watching. Do it. How awesome is the Lord Most High, the great King over all the earth. He is the great King over all the earth. He is awesome. Nebuchadnezzar, thank you, by the way. Nebuchadnezzar learned this truth in a powerful way. And they trusted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego trusted in the Most High God because he is unmatchable. So as we turn our attention to how this practically applies to us, because I believe that the Bible is feverishly practical in all that it teaches. We should always ask ourselves at least two questions, really three, when we get to any passage of the Bible, whether it's a verse or a chapter or a book. What does this say about God? And what does this say about me and who I am to be in response to who he is? How can I apply this truth to my life? I believe we can take three lessons from the fiery furnace. And as I have been thinking and praying about these lessons in my own life, I realize I have so much farther to go in my walk with Jesus Christ. But these lessons help me to be more faithful. So the first lesson is this: God will stand by his people. He will stand by his people. He will not forsake, but he will stand because he is faithful. And he has shown that not only is he undefeatable, unmatchable, uncontainable, unforgettable, and unfathomable, but he is worthy of our trust. And he will stand by us. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego understood this. As they said in Daniel 3:17, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us, and he will deliver us out of your hand. God does not forsake us. He is always faithful to us and his promises to us. That is one of the messages as I have been spending, especially in this recent year, time in the scriptures. That is the message that God continues to remind me of, that he is faithful. Amen? I'm reminded of the words from Isaiah 43:2. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. And when you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. These words may have been on the forefront of the minds of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego as they were stepping and being forced into this fiery furnace. God's faithfulness is rooted in his presence with us. And this is evidenced, and we are reminded of this, by the presence of the fourth person, this angel, possibly even God himself embodied in the fiery furnace. And we know through the very person of Jesus Christ that God has proven that he is indeed faithful and he is present with us. No matter what trial you are going through, and in this fallen world, there are many. The trials and the difficulties are many. They could be health-related. They could be career-related. They could be family or relationship-related, parenting-related, marriage-related, financially-related. I want you to know that God will stand by you and provides the strength and the grace that you need to endure, just as he did for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And because God stands by us and is faithful to us, we can apply the second lesson from the fiery furnace, which is that we can take a wild stand for God. We can show courageous faith and trust in him, as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did, no matter what the cost. Daniel 3:18, their final declaration, we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. They were willing to die for their profession. Talk about a wild stand and courageous faith. Now, we do not experience the same precise threats of walking faithfully with God in the 21st century in America. Some in our world do. While we don't experience the same exact threat, we do experience the same pressure to conform. We do experience the same pressure to compromise and to live our life according to the ways of society instead of the ways of Scripture. We experience this on all levels of all ages. And some of us are old enough to know that that pressure never goes away. We know that we are convinced in our society to bow down to all sorts of false gods rather than to worship the one true God. Physical attractiveness, financial security, personal success. These can all become ultimate things in our lives. And when that happens, we are no longer putting the one true God first and taking a wild stand for him. I'm reminded as I think of the example of these three men, of the example of another group of men from the first century who were followers of Jesus. They were called apostles. And they were told in the book of Acts, you cannot preach the name and the truth of Jesus. That message is causing trouble. You need to stop. But they didn't stop. And they're confronted again by the religious leaders of the Jews in Acts chapter 5, verses 27 and 29. And when they had brought them, they set them before the council, that is the religious leadership of the Jews. And the high priest questioned them, saying, we strictly charged you not to teach in this name. Yet here you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching, and you intend to bring this man's blood upon us. But Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men. See also, we will not bow down and worship your golden image, Nebuchadnezzar. Will we obey God rather than men and take a wild stand and courageously walk our faith out each and every day? I believe that we can and we should, and that our final lesson from the fiery furnace shows us why. And that is that Jesus took a wild stand for us. That is why this gospel or this good news of Jesus Christ shows us not only is God faithful, but we can be faithful to him because Jesus Christ proved himself to be abundantly faithful to us. Much like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he faced certain death and looked it squarely in the face. He was not being threatened with a fiery furnace, but with a fiery trial of the unspeakable pain of the cross. And yet he walked that path for you and for me so that he might die on that cross and suffer for us, so that we might be freed not from the hand of an evil king in his furnace, but from the power and the penalty of sin and an eternity apart from God. Jesus did that for us. But just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the story did not end with death. The story actually ends with life, because after 3 days in the tomb, the good news of the gospel is that Jesus was alive, and he still is alive, and he lives within you and within me when we place our faith in him, so that we might not be removed and separated from God for eternity. His death means our life. His sacrifice means our hope. I'm reminded of the words of Hebrews 12:2, where the author writes, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. That's his wild stand for us. Despising the shame and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. This was Christ's wild stand for you and for me. And maybe for some of you here this morning, your first step in your wild stand is to believe that this is indeed good news to be true. As our band comes forward, I'm reminded again of how thankful I am for this week, this greatest adventure that we learned about. I'm reminded of all the lives that were touched. But I'm also reminded that we should go through these big truths one final time so that we might be reminded whether we're children or whether we're grown-ups, because sometimes I can become a little stale and assume that I know so much. These truths are, God is undefeatable. More participation here. God is unmatchable. God is uncontainable. God is unforgettable. And then finally, God is unfathomable. And maybe for you this morning, all of this seems too unbelievable. If that is the case, I encourage you to look to the truth of Jesus and to know that he took a wild stand for you so that you might recognize God taking his faithful stand for us and being faithful to us in order that we might take a wild stand.